They can be a great people color, they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 46 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that fought the law and the law won. Go home. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm Dave McVeigh.
In this issue, DC gets dirty with what insiders were calling their holy shit month. I don't remember that particular phrase from the Batman series. Meanwhile, Marvel continues to roll out more Marvel Now in April. Then Doctor Strange forms part of Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Ladies, prepare for the return of 70s male perms. Why the Last Man gets a director. Speaking of Amazon, CW is casting their Wonder Woman series because that always seems to go so well. Joss Whedon has almost finished writing The Avengers 2. The big question remains, will Gilgamesh and Triathlon make the team? Guardians of the Galaxy to shoot in England this summer, but has Rocket Raccoon shed his winter coat yet? January Jones doesn't think she's in Days of Future Past. And spoilers, sweetie, Alex Kingston comes to Arrow. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, DC Vertigo's Punk Rock Jesus by Sean Murphy. This is Behind the Panels.
Well, that was a change of pace.
Well, it's punk rock, David.
Okay, I think we need to talk about the definition of punk rock.
I was my understanding. What is more punk rock than a kitty cat with long tails and ears for hats?
Especially when they went to space.
Yeah. Josie and the Pussycat. Actually, the Josie and the Pussycats film, the live-action one that came out about 10 years ago.
This is one of those films that shall not be mentioned, right?
No, this is an underrated gem. It's actually such a biting satire of the music industry that people just ignored it completely.
Really?
It has a fake band in there called De Jure.
Is that your take on that film?
I will stand by that film. And it is based on a comic, so we can talk about it.
That is very true. And, you know, when we talk about things based on comic books, you can pretty much talk about anything, really, because everything seems to be converted into a comic book now. Absolutely. And I would like to say some of them are a little bit late to the game.
Mm.
I noticed this month Marvel has started to release the movie adaptation of Thor.
Huh.
it's like, okay, I think we're about a year behind schedule on this one.
Yeah, because we're getting the second one this year. Yeah. Look, David, first of all, we're just going to give a big apology. We are running a week late ourselves.
We are.
You know, life just got in the way. So that's all we can say. We are running a week, but we're still a fortnightly show, people. We haven't moved to 3 weeks.
No. And the next issue may actually be only a week away. We don't know at this point.
We don't know. Yeah,
so,
it could be.
But yeah, we try and do it every fortnight. But you know what? We do this for free for you people, so
absolutely.
Sometimes things are going to get in the way.
Right. I mean, like, if you want to send us money, because sometimes doing things for free does cost us,
mm-hmm.
feel free.
Absolutely.
We don't mind at all. But look,
donations at geekactually.com.
But look, I know you've all been hanging out for it, because it has been a little while, so let's just get straight into a very godly themed vintage clip.
Is there anything that can beat that opening?
Well, let's try this on for size, David. I think it might.
Ah, back on Earth once more, after countless ages. Now to the hospital and my arch enemy, Thor.
Yes, Thor was here, bless his heart. He made the children so happy. Then he left. I don't know where he is now. Oh, why, he's gone.
I must find Thor. Without revealing my own presence. Only some mysterious catastrophe will bring him to the scene.
Can't be, awful.
It's beyond belief.
They've been transformed into living negatives. Help us, somebody help!
A few short blocks away, Dr. Don Blake and his lovely nurse hear the commotion.
What is it, Doctor? What's happening?
Some supernatural force is at work. I must help, but not as Dr. Don Blake.
But Doctor, why, he's gone.
Once again, I must change my cane into the magic hammer. A Thor, god of thunder.
Look, it's Mighty Thor!
Ah, my simple feat of enchantment has done its work well.
Clear the street. Some sinister magical force is at work. As I rotate my hammer, antimatter particles will be emitted. There, it's working. Wondrously whirling like a super fan, it blows the antimatter particles at the negative victims, causing the antimatter to reverse their atoms, transforming them into positive humans once more.
The spell is over! We're normal again!
Thanks to Thor!
What a great display of skill!
You were wonderful.
It's a really wonderful day. They turned him into positive humans.
Display of skill.
I love the fact he goes, and I will use my cane and turn into a hammer and become Thor, because I sound no different.
David.
We're normal again.
I also love the fact that he goes, there must be supernatural dealings. I will have to become Thor. And all I can think is, am I still speaking out loud?
Now, I don't know. I don't know if this was in the original comic, but in that animated version, he disguised himself as David
Donald Blake.
Donald Blake, rather, and he had a cane,
yes,
which was a disguised version of Mew Mew.
Mew Mew. That's right. Basically, he would the cane, because Donald Blake was crippled.
Right.
He used to walk with a cane.
Oh, the antithesis of a god.
Exactly. He was put into the body of this humble man who basically was gamey. You know, not gamey. What's the word I'm looking for? He had a gimme knee. What's the word I'm looking for?
I'm going to let you struggle with it, David.
Okay, help me.
Gimpy?
Gimpy leg, thank you. And then, of course, when he would smack his cane down, the cane was actually a disguised Mew Mew. And
thanks to Kat Dennings, that will forever be Mew Mew.
It'll forever be Mew Mew. His Mjolnir. And then he would, of course, become Thor. Because Thor and Donald Blake were actually two different people.
Yes.
It wasn't that he was disguised as Donald Blake. He was in the body of Donald Blake.
Right, right, right.
So,
because in the current continuity, Thor doesn't have to worry about it. He's just Thor.
He's just Thor. But they make that reference to Donald Blake being the doctor boyfriend.
Yeah. Okay, so I mean, look, that was
very amusing.
That was, of course, from 1966,
a gold year.
Mighty Thor. Everything that came out that year will turn up as a vintage clip at some point.
Everything good came out of that year, including stuff like
Tony Stark makes you feel.
Yeah, that one.
I was going to come out with something good then, but I won't.
Or this one? So,
when Captain America throws his.
You know, that's that year.
That year. Pretty much anything we've ever played on this show. Now, David, this is about the time we normally go into a section called What We've Been Reading. But for the first time ever, we've got a bit of this.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So what have you been reading?
Oh,
tell me.
I have been reading so much. Now, for some strange reason, David, I've been reading a lot of stuff by Jeff Lemire lately.
Funny that.
Because we've got a little bit of exciting news. I got an email back from Mr. Lemire this week, who's expressed his willingness to talk to us on this show. So expect, hopefully, with fingers crossed, touching wood all over the place, we will be speaking to not only Jeff Lemire, but once we've confirmed it, another quite big comic book writer in the coming weeks as well. So we're very excited about that. We've got a few...
We don't want to jinx it just yet.
No, although jinx might be a hint. So we're looking very much forward to that. But I've been reading a whole lot of stuff from Jeff Lemire, because obviously if you've been reading his current stuff, you've been reading things like Animal Man, you've been reading... you know that he's coming, he's writing Green Arrow very shortly. But I went back to write some of the stuff that he really made a name for himself with, like Essex County, which is a series of graphic novels, and they are heartbreakingly beautiful. They are, I think we have to do that on a show.
Yes, we will do that.
It's a 500 pages in its complete format, but really, really fast read. Like, because it's mostly visual, and there's a lot of still frames and things in there. So it's definitely a must read. But I've also been reading Sweet Tooth, which is...
I want to read that. I haven't actually read that yet.
It's a high concept where it's kind of like an event's happened, everyone got sick, and these animal hybrid children were being born. So it's sort of a little bit like Why the Last Man mixed with a little bit of animal. Like it's got a lot of his stuff that he's doing in there. So that's quite interesting. But this week, the stuff that's come out, there were two new titles that I think are worth mentioning. Young Avengers just started. Now, if you read the Marvel Now Point One,
yes,
you saw a little bit of a slice of the feel from that, and so it's quite good actually.
My question is, I've been reading Avengers Arena,
mm-hmm.
and that was kind of what everybody thought Avengers Academy was becoming. Mm-hmm. So, how is that related to Young Avengers?
This is different. This just seems to be, you know, the thing I want to say about this series. It strikes me as being the closest to the spirit of the original kind of Spider-Man books, in the sense that these are teen heroes dealing with teenage problems as well as having to be heroes.
Kind of going back to early X-Men, perhaps?
Probably, yeah. Probably more okay. X-Men, because there's two heroes in there. They're gay lovers, mm-hmm. and there's that sort of storyline. There's other people dealing with jobs, and there's, you know, all that kind of stuff's happening as well. So it's worth a read, and there's a kid Loki in there, because one of the characters who's, I think... Correct me if I'm wrong, people. Where you can write in angrily to feed.
I may be able to answer this question for
you. One of them is the kid of Scarlet Witch, I think, at least in one reality.
I thought you were talking about the kid Loki then. No. The kid Loki is actually Loki. So
it's Loki, but there's different that realities
comes
as
from
well.
It actually comes from the...
His Asgardian variant, apparently.
Well, apparently, where it comes from is, if you go back and read the run of Thor that started with J. Michael Straczynski, with the whole Oklahoma thing, that actually, when he was bringing all the gods back, blah, 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 there was a big subplot. He ended up... They killed Loki, but he's come back to life, but he's come back as an earlier body.
Right.
It's actually Loki. Thor wished for his brother back, basically. Got his brother back, but as a child.
Okay, so before he went rogue, basically.
Yeah, so Loki is back, but as a child.
The other thing, the other ongoing that I've been reading...
It was a really stupid story.
The other ongoing that I read this week was FF, number 3, I think, came out. I love this series. Like, I love, we knew that...
I'm not in the love category yet. I'm in the... it's okay.
Well, I love it because I love the art, and I love the insanity of it, and I love... the last issue that I read didn't have a lot of Medusa in it. It was more about... minor spoilers, people, because at the end of issue 2... a future version of Johnny Storm comes back, and we want to know what's happened to the Fantastic Four in that time.
Because they were only supposed to be gone for 4 minutes.
Yes,
yeah.
But there's a plot that involves Doctor Doom, Kang the Conqueror, and a time-displaced Annihilus as well.
Right.
So there's all that stuff going on. But the FF side of things is actually just the kind of fun, batshit stuff that Mike Allred exceeds at drawing. Which he did in X-Force, he did in his Madman series, and all that kind of stuff. And this is written by Matt Fraction, who is the same writer as Hawkeye at the moment. So it seems like there's two Matt Fractions who exist.
Because they're very different books.
Very, very different styles. Yeah. And Matt Fraction's always had that really off-the-wall kind of bizarre kind of series, as well as his very serious, very grounded kind of thing that he's doing with Hawkeye, which is still a magnificent series. The other thing I'll just mention very, very quickly is Star Trek Countdown to Darkness, which is a prequel to, depending which way you look at it, it's a prequel to Star Trek Into Darkness or a sequel to J.J. Abrams' first Star Trek. It sort of fills in the void. Why it's worth reading if you're a Star Trek fan... the introduction of a character who will be familiar to fans of the original series, particularly people who've watched the original pilot of the original series, and people will get a lot out of that. If that's a reveal of a character that's in there, it could give you a hint as to the direction of the second Star Trek film.
Uh-huh.
So definitely worth reading if you haven't picked it up already.
Fair enough. Boy, you've been busy.
Yes, I've been very, very busy.
I got to say, this last few weeks, I kind of went backwards because I got a little bit disillusioned a couple of weeks ago with the most recent World's Finest, and I kind of, you know, I'm a Power Girl fan.
I'm actually looking at a picture of Power Girl.
There's a picture
Girl
of Power
right
Girl
now.
On my desktop right now, and I am a Power Girl fan when she's done right. Not all Power Girl has been done right, but recently we had the Amanda Connor run, and that was actually a really good run. And, The new Power Girl in the new 52, or the newish 52 as we should call it, is just not Power Girl at all. And I got really kind of frustrated, so I immediately loaded my iPad up with that Amanda Connor run. of Power Girl. I went back and reread it. Now, she only drew, and it was written by, name has gone out of my head, but anyway, but it's, she drew, that team only did 13 issues, 12 issues, 13 issues, something like that, to get it started. And I got to tell you, I went back and I just devoured that series again, and I really like that series. That those 12, 13 issues are really, really sensational. They've got a sense of humor. They are clever. They really kind of play up the whole Power Girl idea of a superhero. They kind of play up the idea of a superhero who really doesn't have a place. And I like that about her, because for those who don't know the Power Girl character, they've actually reinvented her origin two or three times now. They don't know what to do with her. They've never really known what to do. At one point, she was Kryptonian. Then they decided that she was actually Atlantean. And now she's back being Kryptonian again. And so they just never have known. At one point, she was supposed to be Supergirl from another Earth. But then that didn't work out quite right. And, you know, anyway, so it goes on and on. Anyway, so this idea of this is that she's basically trying to find her place. And she is Kryptonian. She is basically Kara from another world, and that could be a different variation of Supergirl at a different age, who doesn't want to take Supergirl's place because she realizes she doesn't belong there, so she just has made her own world. And it's actually a very, very witty book.
I should have remembered the writers on that were Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray.
Thank you very much, yes. And of course, what's interesting is after the 12 issues, the writer is replaced. The new team came in, and the writer was Winnick, who we both like a lot as well. And so it's like you sit there and Jeff Winnick, and it's really interesting the pedigree that has actually worked on this series before it was basically unceremoniously ditched because of the New 52. Like a lot of series at that time.
Yes.
But so I've actually spent a great deal of time going back and rereading that series. Are we going to talk about what we've been watching as well?
We will talk about what we've been watching, because actually that's an interesting segue, because one of the series that suffered in that reboot was Green Arrow. But of course, the TV series Arrow came back last week after a mid-season break. And the thing I really like about there's one other thing that we've been watching, which I think we're going to spend a little bit of time on.
Yeah, we'll come back to that one. That's the big one.
But Arrow's been going from strength to strength. I'm a huge Green Arrow fan, and I had every reason to love and hate this series, but I'm just loving everything about it. It's just getting better and better. It is a very, very serious take, but they're starting to build their own DCU on screen here. And like last week's episode, from our point of view when we're recording this, introduced Firefly, who a lot of people, when we did Batman Nightfall not too long ago, he was a major antagonist in that. And this week's episode, the freshest one we've seen, just introduced Blackhawks, which was nice.
Which is a book series they axed.
Yeah, right down to Ted Gaynor, who was one of the original Blackhawks in there as well. So that was really cool to see. And they've just introduced in drug form, and they're going to introduce in person form, I think, very soon, is Vertigo, who long-time Green Arrow readers will know as Count Vertigo, was a major, major one of his rogues way back in the 60s and 70s, I think it was. And I think the first Green Arrow miniseries, which didn't come along until 1983, and that was the first thing that actually was a Green Arrow solo thing. The major villain in that was Count Vertigo. So he's a very significant character for fans of Arrow, but the way they're introducing him here is through a drug called Vertigo. So the thing I like about this series is that it's introducing all these characters, but doing it within the context of the universe. So I think that's something to be said. Now, something else that's been a far more faithful adaptation.
Now, this is awesome.
Is, of course, Batman The Dark Knight Returns. Now, we spoke about the first part of this quite some time ago, and I think the week later we actually did. That is our pick of the week. But part two has just come out in the US. It'll be coming out here shortly in Australia. Far too long a wait between the US and Australian release. But
especially in this age of digital. I mean, come on.
Well, the fact that it was released digitally first in the States, and then it came out. It's coming out a couple of weeks later on Blu-ray and DVD. This is the business end of The Dark Knight Returns. This is when it's basically the Joker returns as well.
Yep.
And the ultimate confrontation between Batman and Superman. And my God, they do it well.
They do. I mean, look, this is an incredibly faithful rendition of it. With the exception, yes, they did excise the voiceover. We talked about that with the first part as well. One of the flavors of The Dark Knight Returns is that voiceover of him describing everything going on. But surprisingly, it doesn't miss it. You can actually get away with this series, this movie, without that voiceover. It does work.
The second part takes a few more liberties, not so much in terms of plot, but just in terms of the way it frames it.
Like I was shocked though that they actually got away with some of the stuff that they got away with. So
it's still very bloody.
Yeah,
it's still
just in tone. There's actually, and I don't want to spoil anything, but the ultimate conclusion to the Joker end of this story. Mm. When I read that. That is actually a really harsh thing.
When
we were watching the movie, I was thinking, how are they going to get away with that? I mean, this is still PG-13. It's still direct to DVD.
Here in Australia.
M here. And I'm thinking, it's really harsh. Mm. That's a hard ending for that whole part. And they did it absolutely faithfully.
Yeah. And this is the thing. I mean, I think the DC animated unit has been doing flawless adaptations. If they could get some of that magic happening on the big screen... outside of the Batman universe.
Now, the question is, if the rumors are true and if Bruce Timm really is gearing up the Killing Joke, which I now think they could get away with.
Oh, now they could, yeah.
And seeing what they did with the second half of this, you could get away with there's nothing in the Killing Joke that is harder than some of the stuff that's in that second half. The question is, would Alan Moore now approve?
Mm.
If you did it that faithfully.
Yeah.
That faithfully, would Alan Moore approve?
Yeah, I would love to see that. You know what I'm surprised they haven't done? Given how, and well, I suppose Jeff Loeb has been more involved with the Marvel end of the universe, but I'd love to see an adaptation of his Batman: The Long Halloween.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I've heard rumors that is also being considered.
Because I think, but the thing is, once they do the Killing Joke, we'll have Year One, Dark Knight Returns, and Killing Joke as animated adaptations. That's pretty much the three best. Yeah. Batman stories. If you were going to give someone three, Batman
the only thing
stories
I would do after that, I would follow that up with maybe Nightfall.
Yeah, actually do that the way... Because Dark Knight Rises took so much from both of those books. Mm. It'd be nice to see a faithful version of it.
Yeah. Well, because Year One, I mean, Batman Begins took a whole bunch from Year One.
But I got a little clip here from Part 2 just to play. Because this is a little bit of interplay between Superman and Batman. And I love this scene visually because it's the same thing. It's such a parody scene.
I burst out laughing.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
It's Clark standing there with his white billowing pirate shirt flowing,
and that
with a
long
bald eagle,
curl.
Yeah, and a bald eagle landing on his arm. So this is them talking after the first time they've been encountered each other in the field.
Right into their hands last time when the parents' groups and the subcommittees came after us. You're the one they pointed to. You act like a criminal.
We are criminals, Clark. We always have been. You're still the one, too. Only difference is you have a boss.
And you answer to no one. You know, we almost had this talk 10 years ago, when you wouldn't go along with the deal we made. Everyone else agreed. Diana went back to her people, Hal left the planet.
And Oliver, did he agree?
That's not how I wanted that to go.
He was all torn up about it, too.
He made it necessary. Like
I'm about to.
Do you even remember why you retired?
I remember.
Look, either shut it down or one of these days someone with authority is going to tell me to come stop you. And when that happens...
When that happens, may the best man win.
God, I love Peter Weller's
voice. It's brilliant. It's like, look, you know, Kevin Conroy has been the ultimate Batman voice for years.
And he still always will be.
But, yeah, Peter Weller.
Peter Weller's just got for the old man Wayne.
Yeah, because you had to give him so much more that years.
Yeah. And we also had to, I mean, as much as I love Kevin Conroy is Batman. I mean, for the Batman animated series, he is Batman. Absolutely. Mm. But you needed to differentiate this out of the canon. You needed to say that this is its own thing. This isn't the Batman animated series. We can't put Kevin Conroy.
Well, because and also it is officially released as an Elseworlds kind of
absolutely
thing.
So it's the same thing with Year One. It's the same thing with what's the other one? Some of the Justice League. Justice League Final Frontier or whatever it is.
Yeah, New Frontier.
Thank you. They replaced the original voices because you said it's not part of the canon.
Yeah, exactly right.
And it's like as not part of the canon, we can play with the voices. Mm. The only one that I didn't agree with at all was Under the Red Hood when they replaced Joker's voice with somebody else's, because that kind of still fit within the canon. You know what I mean? So we didn't We didn't kind of.
Yeah. And Joker in this is wonderful as well.
Oh, look, and that's Ben Linus from Lost.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and that's he's just fantastic because he's so soft spoken.
Yeah. Batman.
What's that actor's name? He's wonderful.
Oh, yeah, I'll have to look it up.
Funny, we had an interconnected group of computers that can tell us information.
But we've got to move on, David. So let's just let's just have a little bit of this.
What a scoop!
Right, let's keep
so jaunty.
Let's keep this tight because we're barreling through. We spent a bit of time there talking about things, but that's all right.
That's okay.
We had a bit of fun time.
We've been gone for 3 weeks.
Exactly. Stick with us, people. It's going to be a fun show.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy ride,
darling. I've got my Joker lipstick on right now.
Oh dear. He does.
He does. It's true. And my hair's green for some reason, but that's probably more to do with the copper. Marvel now is plowing on into April 2013. At some point, we thought that the end of the new Marvel titles.
They just keep coming up with new stuff.
New stuff coming out. Marvel Now solicitations for April 2013 got released about a week or so ago. And there's some really, really cool stuff coming out. One of the things that we haven't spoken about before is some of the events that they're building to this year.
Sorry, Michael Emerson is his name.
Michael Emerson, thank you. That's Ben Linus.
Yes.
And if you haven't followed that trend before. Sorry.
Tangent.
One of the major events we haven't spoken about coming up is the Age of Ultron, which one of the first major events of 2013.
Now, I believe this is being written by my main man.
This would be BMB.
Yes, yeah, there it is.
Brian Michael Bendis, who I may or may not have gotten an email from this week. So.
And I may have not, or may not have got a tweet from. But
yeah. Yes. Listen to a future episode, people. look, you know, I think that the cat isn't. We don't want to jinx it, but
no, don't jinx it. Don't say it.
But we're working our way towards it, people, and we're very close. But this Age of Ultron is going to be a bit of a crossover event between the Marvel cosmic stuff and the Earthbound stuff. So I think that's going to be a major, major event. Looking forward to that a lot. All the Marvel press at the moment is soliciting the Age of Ultron stuff. There's also going to be in April an Ultron standalone series starting as well. There's also talk of an Avengers Captain Marvel event. The other thing that they're doing in April, which is Thanos Rising. Which is an origin story for Thanos.
Which put the teaser poster up, I believe, in our
Facebook page, which is facebook.com/behindthepanels. Mm-hmm. Please go and like us on there if you haven't already, because we're always updating that with little bits and pieces. There's something called Marvel's New Universe as well, which is sort of launching the Marvel multiverse by the sounds of things. So that's going to be interesting. But also the new Marvel Now title that's starting is X-Men number one. We'll be launching in April.
I'm starting to get confused with the X-Men titles now.
Yeah, I look. We had stacks of X-Men books before. This is just going to be another one. And also, they seem to be teasing something around Spider-Man 2099. Do you remember the 2099 titles? It was a short-lived thing there. Yeah, like they seem to be mentioning
kind of like the
something.
Episode 1 billion with 1 million or 1 million, the DC
thing.
Universe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this was... There's some very, very strange... I'm just going to see if they can... Yeah, and under the Superior Spider-Man solicitation, which is basically the replacement for Amazing Spider-Man at the moment, there's a little cryptic line saying, in a new development for a Spider-Man who hasn't been seen for some time, and by time, we mean centuries. Now, 2099 is not a few centuries away, but a lot of people have been thinking that's probably Spider-Man 2099. There was a whole line of Marvel comics.
Now, the question is, you've by now read Superior Spider-Man, yeah?
No, I haven't, actually.
Richard Gray, how
well,
dare
you? Well, you heard all the other things I've been reading.
I need you to read Superior Spider-Man before next show.
Okay, I'll do
that.
We
need to talk about this because...
I was hoping it wouldn't come up.
No, the reason I want you to read it is because... the last few panels, and I'm going to say right now, spoilers for then, not now, but after you've read it, we will be talking about spoilers when we talk about it, because an interesting development.
Yes. Look, I've heard bits and pieces, but we'll talk about it next week, because I think I'd like to talk about a few of the Marvel Now things as well. The other thing that's been happening is Bleeding Cool teased this story that in April, DC Comics would be bringing us what they called, and you heard this at the top of the show, something called Holy Shit Month. What they were calling internally Holy Shit Month. We thought something big's going to happen, someone's going to die, what's going on here? When they finally released their solicitations, it seems to be all about fold-out covers.
Oh, yay!
Now, the thing is, though, you've got your cover, But when it folds out, you'll see that they're fighting someone. There'll be a big reveal, something that'll make you go, holy shit, presumably.
Really?
So I'm not quite sure what is going on. What are you doing over there,
I'm trying
David?
To open a link and it's not linking. It's not. It's going boom, boom. Every time
just
I try
stop
to...
Stop clicking it,
this
David.
Is your holy shit link. I'm trying to open it.
Don't worry about it. I've given you the gist of the story. Yeah. It's a very, very short story. The only... So we'll see what happens if this leads to major crossovers or whatever happenings. But what is happening is that iVampire, DC Comics Presents... are being cancelled from the New 52. They're also cancelling Saucer Country as well as the Superman Family Adventures. One of the interesting
I don't even
things,
know what Saucer Country is.
It's a Vertigo title.
Oh, okay.
So, but they're also cancelling Superman Family Adventures. But Jim Starlin, who we should be very familiar with because he pretty much is the architect of the Marvel Cosmic Universe from
right.
the start of Annihilation, or before the start of Annihilation, he's joining Stormwatch. A title that is still going for some reason. And he's going to be writing that from issue 19.
Is it me? I actually got through 1.5 issues of Stormwatch and went, I'm bored.
I haven't read that for, at least the last 17. Possibly the last 18. however, when you're up to, what are we up to? 16 this month. So I haven't read the last 15 at the moment.
Right. Okay, so I'm not alone. Good.
Yeah. So look, I don't know what's going on there. But far more exciting at the moment than the comics world is, look, we're movie geeks, so let's have a bit of this.
Just a very quick one before you go on to movie news. Cut me off.
Before I go on to.
Yeah.
It's a good thing I didn't play.
I'm going to let you finish. I was about to say, DC Presents could still be going today had they stuck with the Dead Man story.
Oh, the Dead Man. If they'd made DC Presents a Dead Man book, then that would have been
if
fun.
If they'd stuck with that, just as it was getting good, they moved away from it.
I know. I would have liked to have read more on that Dead Man. That unfortunately, that's made him part of the Dark Justice.
But we didn't
thing.
Get to follow his story.
No, exactly. And that story was fascinating.
Absolutely. And some of the best written stuff in the DCU for a couple of issues there. And then. And it wasn't even a goodbye. It was just like, here's one issue. And the next issue is a completely different story.
It was kind of like the old Brave and the Bold stuff. But
oh, man. Anyway, sorry. What you were going on about something?
I was
going
to say that we should start some.
Cool.
Completely unprompted. okay, we're gonna whip through this really quickly. The lead story we've got here is that there will be a Doctor Strange movie. Kevin Feige has
complete with porn stash.
Complete with porn stash has and 70s man perm.
Yeah,
has confirmed that Doctor Strange, which I've been talking about for years, is definitely one of them. One of those films. He's a great original character, and he checks the box of this criteria. The criteria being that they're going to explore different corners of the Marvel universe in the third phase. He's totally different from anything else we have, just like Guardians of the Galaxy. He's totally different from anything we've done before, as is Ant-Man, which keeps us excited. Ant-Man will also form part of Phase 3.
What I thought was very interesting about Ant-Man was that the producers have so much as admitted as they were not going to do an Ant-Man film, but they're excited about Edgar Wright's Ant-Man. And so because it's Edgar's vision, that's why they're doing it.
They said here, it's also through the lens of Edgar Wright, which is the only reason we're making the movie.
Yeah, there you go. You've got the same quote.
That's quite exciting because I think a Doctor Strange movie done right.
I would be all in for a Doctor Strange movie done right. I think now you're doing
it. Now I'm doing it. I'm trying to open up the next story subtly.
Doctor Strange, I have always... None of our links are working, dude. Doctor Strange has always been a character that I have really enjoyed. I know not everybody does, but I think if done right, Doctor Strange is a terrific idea. And let's face it, you can do a lot of stuff with magic.
Now, the other big bit of movie news, because we've covered this book before and we've loved it to death, is Why the Last Man.
Oh, yeah.
And while I still think this would be better off as a series, they've got Dan Trachtenberg to direct the film. Now, if you don't know the name... he was, along with commercial background, he put himself on the map, according to this Deadline article, and you certainly know this, David, for his trailer for a faux movie based on the video game Portal.
Well, it wasn't even a trailer, it was a short
film.
But Dan Trachtenberg is probably most famous at the moment as he was one of the three hosts of The Totally Rad Show, which was massively popular video podcast where they used to do pop culture, movies, video games, and everything else. It's now finished, I believe, but The Totally Rad Show was like huge for so long, and during that time, he was directing his commercials. and he was doing some pretty excellent work in the commercial
film.
It's
about a 7-minute short film, isn't it?
Yeah, so, and when you finally go and have I actually have it here.
On that link that we've got in our show notes, they've embedded the
video. And if you haven't seen Portal No Escape, this is must viewing. This is an amazing short film.
No, it looks visually looks stunning.
It's stunning, and if he can bring his visual style to Why the Last Man, I'm all in. I think that's great.
The script's going to be by Matthew Fetterman and Steven Skaya, and it's going to be produced by Bender Spink, who the name is familiar to people. We spoke about this a while ago. It's that company that was set up specifically to bring comic books.
Oh, damn!
As well as David Goyer will be one of the co-producers.
Well, we're going to hold that against the production at this point.
So moving swiftly through the movie news, speaking of Amazon...
You know, I used to be a huge David Goyer apologist, and now I'm not. Anyway.
my link says it's failing me left.
I have it here. I cut and paste them. It works.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing now.
Yeah, cut and paste them.
So speaking of Amazon's, apparently CW president, this is going back a few weeks now, talked about the Amazon Wonder Woman series and said that... while Batman's still off limits, that they will be making, they've been casting for Amazon, which is effectively their Wonder Woman series, and so they're obviously following the same naming convention as Arrow.
Is this also going to be by Berlanti?
I'm not entirely
sure. If it is, I'm in, because he's doing a great job with Arrow. I just saw his name mentioned in this article. It's there saying Arrow's success when you have Greg Berlanti and Mark Guggenheim.
I think that they was, yeah.
As your showrunners has a lot to do with the success. We hope that Alan Heinberg... Oh, sorry, somebody else. Okay. But look, I have kind of got faith in Amazon at this point. I think the last Wonder Woman attempt was misguided. I think I think they were seduced by the idea of David E. Kelly, and I think he was completely the wrong person. For the production. I think if you do an Amazon, if you do Wonder Woman like Arrow, I'm in.
And I think apparently they're not planning to use Batman in that universe as well, because he was pretty much off limits as long as the Christopher Nolan trilogy was going on.
He was also off limits during all of the run of Smallville.
And so they're saying no, he's not going to be there, but and he's not going to make a trip to Starling City either. But given that both Wonder Woman and Arrow aren't going to be on the CW, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a crossover there. So I'm excited. If CW is now building a DC television universe, we should be very excited.
Interesting thing I heard the other day, there was a rumor and speculation, so there's no basis in fact here as far as I can tell. But one person was actually speculating that the Justice League movie that is gestating over at Warner Brothers at the moment, although will not have anything to do with the Nolan universe, which means that we won't have, what's his name? You know, him. Mm. They are saying that there's a very strong possibility that it will star the star of Arrow, the star of Man of Steel. So all these television and movies that they're working on right now are the crossovers.
Part of that same
universe. So they're basically saying that the Amazon who is cast in Amazon, that Wonder Woman, will be the Wonder Woman for the movie. Interestingly enough, what they did say was that the rumor is that in this particular universe, Ryan Reynolds will still play Green Lantern.
Interesting.
So it's like...
So I think
intriguing.
Green Lantern was meant to be the first of their DC cinematic universe. But
so Batman is the one that is the standout. That'll have to be completely recast and recreated. I'm assuming with whatever Batman is the reboot.
Okay. Well, another thing we've got looking. Speaking of big,
now this is all,
universe,
mind you, this is all. It could be fan service.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, the thing that's gone beyond fan service is Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh yeah.
And Joss Whedon's got his. He said he's only a couple of months away from finishing his Avengers sequel script. I'm gonna do what I swear I'd never do, is and just go live and see if I can play this clip straight out of the browser and see if it works.
All let's right. Go. Let's try.
And it's loading.
It's coming. Here it comes. Any minute. Here comes.
Oh no, there's going to be an ad.
Oh. What are we advertising that we don't get any money for?
It doesn't matter.
Hello.
No, let's just forget that ever happened. Basically, it's Joss Whedon's talking about that it's not going to be far away, that he's going to what he said before, that he's going to go, he doesn't go bigger, he goes deeper. He's talking about all these people you've met, you just have to, so you have that out of the way. Now you can spend time just digging in. And by digging in, I mean with a scalpel to cause pain. So, and he's also talks a little bit about S.H.I.E.L.D., which I don't know if you've seen on the net, there's been a few clips and pieces from S.H.I.E.L.D. floating around.
I haven't.
They've started, not clips, but there's a few behind the scenes things. You've seen trucks with a big S.H.I.E.L.D. logo on the side of them. Good. So it's happening, people. They're actually looking to screen the pilot in the fall season 2013. So,
I'm excited.
Later this year, we're looking at. Speaking of Marvel Cinematic Universe, while we're still there, Guardians of the Galaxy is apparently heading to Pinewood Studios this summer.
Now, the casting rumors on this thing are all over the place.
Now, we've previously spoken about the Star-Lord casting, which is could be anyone from Zachary Levy to...
Joseph Gordon-Levitt,
which is a fair distance between those people. Because even Joseph Gordon-Levitt, there's still persistent rumors that he's going to turn up in as Batman in the Justice League thing. But, I mean, who really gives a shit? but we can't. He's Robin. Sorry, I spoiled the ending of Dark
Knight. Oh, you bad man.
But what a lovely singing voice he has. But it's going to be shooting at Pinewood Shepperton. So very, very famous studio. And
big studio space.
Very big studio space. So I think they're going to go for broke on this one. But the casting rumors you spoke of that are very weird is around Rocket Raccoon, which I always picture. We both want Ray Winston.
I was hoping I'd have a clip, but I don't have a clip. I was going to play a little bit from Sweeney.
Let's pretend he sounds a little bit, you know.
I'm putting it out there right now. If anybody from Marvel is listening, Ray Winston is the voice of Rocket Raccoon.
Can you imagine him saying, you're saying, thank you, Rocket Raccoon, for bringing this unfeasonably large cannon with you? You know, that's what we want to hear. But unfortunately, they're talking about, this is hard, David, either Adam Sandler or Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey almost, because he could do a voice, he could do a character, what have you, but Adam Sandler...
All righty then.
Adam Sandler would end up be doing his, yeah, exactly.
Just singing a little song about being a Jewish raccoon or something.
There you go. I think that is really bad.
So I'm really hoping they don't go with that casting. But look, still, as we were saying before the show, Guardians is probably our most anticipated blockbuster at the moment.
I'm going to put it out there on the record. I have more anticipation towards Guardians of the Galaxy than I do a new Star Wars film right now.
Now,
which I never thought I would say.
The other side of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the ones that aren't still owned by Disney.
There are no other films.
There's the X-Men films.
I'll give you those.
Now, X-Men Days of Future Past, which is still cause for much excitement because it is going to be a crossover. It's going to be a crossover between Bryan Singer's X-Men universe / Brett Ratner's X-Men
and
universe.
And
Michael K. Vaughn's X-Men universe, which means
let's take Ratner out of that. Just take him out for a minute, okay?
I think we'd like to take Brett Ratner out. Although Tower Heist wasn't so bad.
Tower Heist was pretty good.
So basically we're going to see James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender playing with Sir Patrick Stewart and Sir Ian McKellen.
Engage.
Make it so. Tea, Earl Grey, hot. Any excuse to do that?
Sure.
Yeah. but January Jones is saying that she doesn't think she'll be in it. But this is sort of maybe she's downplaying it, so her appearance is a surprise or what have you.
Or as I would say to you before, there's no great loss.
No, because look, she's
although she was nice eye candy, I will give her that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a fair bit of eye candy in that film. But look, this is famous. Days of Future Past, which I think was X-Men 141 to 142, something along those lines. And this is where they do, there's a time travel element to it, so they could quite feasibly bring in both of those lots of characters, and it's set further into the future as well, where like half the mutants are being killed.
If you were going to cast an Emma Frost for the Singer X-Men, for that period of the X-Men's life, who would you cast? Any thoughts?
Think about that.
Gorgeous, blonde, cold as ice.
Big.
Yeah.
Acting talent.
Huge
tracts of land. that's a good one.
That's a good one, isn't it? Who would you cast? So if you were going to take Emma Frost, if you're going to take the January Jones version out, but you still wanted Emma Frost, you could put in the modern equivalent of her.
You've got me mentally running through the breasts of Hollywood at the moment. And I was going, no, too big, too small.
Just right.
Well, I'll think about
it. Have to think about that. We may come back to that on the next show. We'll
this will play in the back of my mind until the end of the show.
But like the Power Girl picture I have here.
But speaking of babes, horrible segue. Alex Kingston, and you'll know the name from, if you're a Doctor Who fan, spoilers, sweetie. She plays River Song.
Mm-hmm.
She has just been cast in the Arrow TV series as Dinah Lance. Now, as distinct from Laurel Lance, which may give you an indication as to why they called her Laurel rather than...
Well, I'm confused now. Help me out with the DC lore here. Mm-hmm. Black Canary is Diana Lance, isn't she?
No, she's Dinah Lance.
She's Dinah Lance.
Yeah.
Okay. So where does Laurel Lance come into
it? Well, her full name is... Well, she was Dinah Drake originally, but she married Larry Lance, so right. She was Dinah Lance. But her daughter is Dinah Laurel Lance.
Right.
So they've just gone with Laurel Lance for the TV series. Dinah Drake / Dinah Lance was the original Black Canary in the Golden Age, and Dinah Laurel Lance is the second person to take on the mantle of Black Canary. Right. So I suspect that in the TV series, she's coming back, and the quote here is on Superhero Hype, that she said to be making amends with her family that she abandoned years earlier following the tragic death of her daughter aboard Oliver Queen's yacht. I suspect that they might indicate that she was once a costumed vigilante, and that as we've already seen, the well trained Laurel Lance might step up into that old mantle, and they might play with that a bit before Arrow and Black Canary realize each other's secret identities. But they might be doing things independently for a while before they.
Interesting.
So I suspect that's what's going to happen, because we know it's always going to happen. We always know.
Well, you have to.
The end point is. But it could be a Smallville thing. It could be the final episode, you know, the two of them finally.
Question I've got about Arrow as well is, will Speedy ever come around?
See, they've backslid in the latest episode. They've got Thea back onto the drugs again.
Yeah.
So she's become the Brady drug child again after a few moments of them bonding together. Because you thought for a little while he was going to tell her exactly what
he's
been
doing. But with her on drugs now, we have the correlation to the Speedy heroin addict.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, my ward Speedy is a junkie!
You read far too much Green Arrow.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Alex Kingston.
Great flaming arrows.
She's been cast as Dinah Drake, or Dinah Lance. So very, very excited about that, because I think, you know, she's another notable actress for cult fans in there as well, which would mean that two people from the Doctor Who universe are now in that series, because John Barrowman's playing Merlin's dad. But the thing is, I always thought that, like, and... I don't want to look. If people haven't seen it yet, the father has been revealed to be a.
That was an episode and a half ago.
Has been revealed. Should we spoil it, people? Okay, you've had sufficient spoilers to
spoiler.
To pull your car over and turn off the thing. Look, he's revealed to be the Black Archer. Which is basically, but in the original comics continuity, there was a rival archer named Merlin.
Right.
And so when his best friend was Merlin, I always assumed that the rivalry between those two would lead to him being.
But it's his father.
But it's actually his father, which is a very interesting dynamic, because he was always a bit older in the comics as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really, really interesting dynamic that they've got going there. So all the pieces are falling into place for Arrow fans. And it's
now,
quite
all we
exciting.
Need right now is the WWE to cancel it.
Look, with the ratings at the moment, it's not likely. It's still. Sitting at about, on average, about 3.1 million per episode.
That's not bad.
It dropped a bit from the first episode, but it hasn't dropped significantly. So it's still going strong.
Hopefully we'll get the 10 years of Smallville out of it.
Let's hope so. And I think if he keeps taking his shirt off, we should be fine. Now, another show that has been going very, very well and been maintaining massive ratings throughout its...
I finally caught up, too.
...2.5-year run is The Walking Dead Season 3. I think... we're only about 2 or 3 weeks away from the second half of the third season coming back. And here's a little bit of a teaser trailer for that series.
There is no army. There's no government. No hospitals. No police. It's all gone. Where are our people?
Hold on, live inside me. Leave me on my way.
You wanted your brother.
Hold on, live inside me.
How you got it?
You should stop.
Stop what?
Meeting the leader. He's coming.
This fight, it will go down to the last man.
You think he's crazy?
I think he's dangerous.
Andrew, you go to that prison. Stay there.
He wants a war. He's got one.
Leave me home. You once said this isn't a democracy. Now you have to own up to that.
Leave me home.
Lead me home.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, look, it has started to depart a little bit from the comic.
A little bit.
Yeah. But that's a good thing, because I'm now caught up with the comics as well. Cause, and as we've said many times, by issue 106 is what we're up to. It's very much wash, rinse, repeat.
Yeah, it is. Look, I think the comic book series is basically done, and I think they can probably put it to rest now. I have finally caught up with the series. I was about 3 or 4 episodes behind. I finally caught up. And I actually really like the direction the series is going at the moment. If you divorce yourself from the comic... There are, look, and this is not meant to be spoilers. I'm not giving anything away, just certain changes. So just so you can have time to pull over and turn off the podcast, spoiler, 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 okay? Now.
Sorry, Justin, if we keep referencing you.
But the bottom line is they have fundamentally shifted the entire Governor storyline to completely different characters. And that's, so if you're looking for the comic book, you're already in a completely different place because in the comic books, it's Rick and Michonne who are the captives, and Michonne is in the comic book. Spoiler for the comic book is repeatedly raped, and you know there's. I mean, it's a rough series of issues. I almost couldn't get through it.
No, reading it, it was one of the most disturbing reads. I've ever done.
And
we've read some disturbing stuff.
And I kind of went, my God, I don't even know where I'm here at this point. No. You know, and then for the series, I mean, it was Michonne and it was Andrea. Completely different dynamic. And then you got Michonne leaving.
And now we've actually got Andrea in a position where she's sympathetic to the governor.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's a very different take. And the governor is actually likable until his despicable side is revealed. Whereas in the comic book, the governor is vile. Yeah, he's vile from the minute you meet him. You know, he's a slinky,
he's drawn with greasy hair.
Very Hispanic looking. And he's just really, there's something about him. He looks like a gangbanger.
He looks like a 70s.
He looks like something out of Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is not disparaging towards Mexicans. I mean, I'm just.
No, it's just that type of
character. That type of gangbanger you see.
That was very common in those big grade exploitation films.
And he's drawn, and he almost looks like he should have a grill in the whole bit. But he's in the series, he's this, you know, very well spoken, clean cut man, you know, running it's all for the greater good of mankind. And it's like, it's not really, you know, and then there's a lot to it. But I actually quite like the series now. I think that this season has been a really interesting take.
A lot of people are very scared that they're going to kill somebody off soon. And I've seen petitions and places, if Daryl goes, I go. You know, and he's one of the characters that's had such a great arc.
And what's interesting is, I think if you go back, I would not have been surprised to have been in a writer's room to find out that Daryl was created to be fodder, because they actually invented new characters for the series that weren't from the book. And all I could think is, they've created these new characters, so they've got more people to kill off.
Yeah.
Daryl became incredibly popular, and I think he has managed.
But they've also, because they've made him. They're giving him such a progressive arc. Like
exactly.
He's gone from, as you said, disposable redneck to
being a valued member of the cast.
An integral part of that crew.
And so because of that, I think that we've now got a character who, if we tried to kill him off now, people are going to be furious.
Yeah. You know, same with Glenn, if they tried to kill him.
And what is interesting, and we won't spoil it, but a character who died off a couple of episodes ago, we won't say who, just... for Justin.
But I'm sure, look, I mean, to be fair, it's very, in Australia at the moment, it's not on free-to-air television.
No, exactly.
It's harder to come by. So you can get it on iTunes, but you have to pay for it. You can get it on cable, which is where I'm watching.
Yeah. So. What's interesting, though, is when that character was killed off, not a ripple.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody cared.
Yeah. But in the comic, in the last couple of issues of the comic, a major character has been killed off, which if he checks out of the television series, I'm leaving.
Oh, really?
No, like, I mean, I think in the TV series he is a really solid character, and I like the relationship that he has.
Oh, I know the character you're talking about.
Yeah,
too.
and he was killed in such a bloody way in the comic book as well.
Wow. So. Well, it's like in the comic book, and this is spoilers for a comic that came out, well, we're talking a few years ago now. But in the comic book, when Laurie died,
yeah,
the way that went down, which is. We're not talking about the TV series.
And that's a good 5 episodes ago as well. So.
Yeah, and when she went down, though, and they would be attacked by the zombie, remember, as they were escaping, that was brutal.
That was a shocking moment. It was one of those seminal moments in a book where you just thought, my God, they did.
Because she had the baby in her arms.
Yeah, it's like, my God, they did that.
They did that. They took out both those characters in one fell swoop. And you sit there
because so much had been riding on the two of them for like 20, 30 issues. that after the birth and her going down, it was like, you felt like this massive loss.
Yeah, well, and a lot of that is also because the prison stuff went on for a lot longer in the comic book than is going on in the series. And they had built a life. Mm. And the time progression in the comic book, it looks like they had been there for months and months and months because they went through seasons.
Yeah, so
they had been there for a long time.
They were harvesting crops
because Dale was still alive in the comic book.
True.
That was a character they should never have killed off in a TV series. But anyway, but in the comic book, he was still alive. He was harvesting the crops, and you know they had all this stuff. And then for it all to go to shit as fast as it did, and for Laurie and the baby to be taken by the zombies, it was a shocking moment.
Yeah, because it was about getting them comfortable and then shockingly taking them out of that comfort zone, which. Unfortunately, the comic book series is just done
exactly, and I think the up until that prison sequence, it hadn't been wash and repeat at that point, so it was still surprising.
Mm.
What happens now is every time they get comfortable, you go, okay, when's the end coming? Mm. And you actually feel you know it's going to turn to crap because that's exactly the sequence of the comic books now. You know. Anyway, sorry, diatribe.
No, look, I mean, I think it's something that we've been following for a long time, but
we need a rat hole theme.
Yeah. Now, David, we've been talking for almost an hour, so I think it's about time that we had a little bit of this.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
And what a pick it is, Richard.
David, we've picked a good one this week. This is, as we indicated from the Josie and the Pussycats theme at the top, this is Punk Rock Jesus. It's a DC Vertigo title written and illustrated by Sean Murphy.
Hmm.
Now, it is a 6-issue limited series that came out at the started in about September last year and just finished off in the last month or so. And let's just say, let's start this off by saying up front that, David, you and I have fairly similar views on religion.
Yes, and we don't want to get into a big religious debate.
No, but I think where you come from, religiously speaking, will inform the way you read this.
True.
Because it certainly informs the way this was written. Now, this is possibly written by someone who has a bit of faith himself, was raised...
Actually, I would go one step further than that and say it's possibly written by somebody who had faith.
Now, Sean Murphy, and I'm guessing is Irish from the name, but also the very strong Irish flavour throughout this book as well. Something that we also saw with Garth Ennis. And his take on religion as well. And I think when you come from a place that's been so divided by religion, your view of religion is going to be different to other people.
And I want to say that when you first told me about this book several months ago now, I actually thought, what a really, really stupid concept. Mm. And the cover of the book didn't do anything for me. And I just kind of thought, oh, what is this going to be about? I don't really care, and so forth. I think it's very important to note that this book, over the course of 6 issues, is a book that raises a whole lot of questions.
Mm.
And I think that's what its biggest strength is. It's not its art style. It's not just the surface story. The surface story, of course, is the J2 project and blah, blah, blah. It's the questions that Sean Murphy poses about faith, about fanaticism, about science, about... even so far as going about loyalties. It's a really interesting read.
Yeah, and I think on the surface, as you said, this book is just that. It's about this.
It's a parody.
It's a parody of a number of things. First of all, it starts out very much as a parody of reality television as well.
Yeah.
Because when you start this book, it is about the J2 project, which has launched a reality TV show to clone Jesus Christ.
Yes. From the Shroud of Turin.
Yes. And there's a whole thing that they've gone so far as to actually go out and find a virgin to artificially inseminate her to give birth to the second coming.
Yep.
And broadcast a lot of it on television.
Well, that's right. And they've got their island, which is the J2 complex. And basically, it's this isolated island where they're raising the new Jesus and for the whole world to watch.
And the mother's actually selected through like an idol style elimination process and all that sort of thing. Now, there's obviously there's people who are angry about the fact that this is they've dared to try and play God here. This is obviously brings in cloning as well, which is obviously a very sensitive issue with Christian communities around the world. So the fact that they're trying to clone Jesus is a particularly outrageous thing. You've got situations where you've got these hardcore militia Christian groups trying to storm the island. You've got other people protesting about the commercialization of it as well. Meanwhile, you've got Thomas McHale has been hired. He's a former IRA.
And he, we really tell the story through his eyes.
We do. And he is a former IRA bodyguard, huge brick house of a bloke who's been hired to protect the mother and the baby. But as you said, because it's through his eyes, we get to learn about what's informed his religious point of view, as well as maybe how his faith is renewed through these six issues.
Because interestingly enough, because one of the questions that is posed throughout the entire book is it really Jesus?
Mm.
Has it really been a clone of Jesus? And what's interesting is through Mikhail, he does believe that this is the reincarnation, or the recreation of Jesus.
And the reason he wants to believe that is because he believes he was responsible for his parents' death when he was a kid at the hands of various IRA factions. And he desperately wants to make amends for that moment in his life that he's gone off. And he's killed a lot of people in his time.
In fact, he believes he's symbolized by a cross on his back for every death.
Every death, yes. He's actually got a cross tattooed on his back for every death. And he believes he's going to hell if he can't redeem himself. Mm. And I think it's an interesting, that alone is interesting musing on faith, the idea that, and particularly that very, very Catholic view of faith, that you can be redeemed through acts of good grace and be, you know, recanted on your deathbed. And that Catholic guilt that he carries around with him the whole time. It's something we certainly see in Daredevil a lot of the time, you know, that weight of the Catholic guilt. And as I said, to another extent in Preacher as well.
Mm.
That idea as well, and that's more through the character of the vampire character. The name's just slipped my mind.
Cassidy.
Yeah. More through Cassidy than through the preacher himself, because I think the preacher's more of a Baptist kind of.
Yeah, and he's not carrying any guilt.
Guilt at all? No. He lights up a cigarette and he's
over it
and,
all,
and tells someone to go f themselves. Yeah. You know, it's So you've got a really, really complex character in Mikhail, but you've also got playing with the mother that's been selected. Gwen has got a very complex set of problems as well. She's young. She wasn't always destined to handle the spotlight of this intense worldwide spotlight. She becomes an alcoholic.
Well, she was seduced by the money, by the fame, by everything else that goes along with this. But of course, got in way over her head.
I mean, she's literally given virgin birth to a child
who's supposed to be the savior of mankind,
and emotionally, physically, she's not prepared.
And she's also losing control because as she's given birth, she now is trying to be the mother to this child, but she's not really allowed to be the mother of this child. This child's mother is the J2
complex. Raised in a completely artificial environment, with the exception of one, with projections of children, with the exception of one other real child, who's seemingly the child of one of the cloning doctors.
The main doctor, the one that's basically been the one that cloned him and is basically his keeper.
Yeah. So you've got that going on, although that's later revealed to be something else. Although that's actually something that's revealed in the first issue that we may as well spoil it now, spoilers and all people. In the very first issue, they reveal that when the clone was born, it wasn't a single child, it was a twin.
It was a twin, yeah.
And the corporation tries to, the J2 project tries to dispose of that twin, that we later learn that didn't happen.
Yeah, so what we learn is that the scientist had hidden the twin, had said that she had gotten pregnant separately, said she gave birth to that child and was raising that as her child. So it's all very convoluted, people.
It is. I mean, but it's funny. It seems like it's a really convoluted, you know, melodrama, Bold and the Beautiful style plot, but it seems quite logical when you're reading it.
Yeah, and that's one thing that surprised me about this book was that it actually is very clear. And you sit there and you're reading it going, okay, I buy into that world. Mm. I buy into it, especially in this day and age of American Idol and Dancing with the Stars and everything. I completely buy into the fact that a producer would go, yeah, what the hell? Let's not do the J2 project. And with the we know about American fanaticism, how that would go down.
Now, this is actually an interesting book because it's only six issues, but it's epic because it takes place over a number of years. Mm. So by the time we finish this, Jesus, who is actually called Chris because it's close to Christ, is a teenager by the time we finish this, and he becomes disillusioned with the whole thing himself, and he actually goes off.
Well, what we discover throughout the book is that he actually has an incredibly high IQ,
mm.
and the scientist starts feeding him information.
Yes.
She starts giving him books and music and stuff like that, which he was forbidden to have.
Mm.
And he starts to learn about the outside world. And he actually and about learns
the
about
world's religion.
And he learns about all religions. And he starts learning about all of this stuff and realizes that this is all not for him.
Mm.
And so basically escapes.
Yeah. And what he discovers when he escapes is a little thing called punk music.
Yes.
He was listening to CDs before he left, but so he was already into punk, and he was actually appearing in public places with the Mohawk and stuff like that. He turns up at the gig of one of the last remaining punk bands. This is set somewhere in
an indeterminate future.
Where obviously cloning is at a point where they can clone people successfully, and there's
and polar bears apparently.
And polar bears. There's a wonderful polar bear wandering through this. Named after various colas, I think. You know? he becomes involved in punk music, and not only does he become the leader of this punk band and punk movement, in fact, he starts to travel around the world preaching against religion and against things, to the point where they travel to Jerusalem
which brings us to the ultimate climax of this, because he
to
basically
bring down religion at its birthplace. You know,
I may have misread it. Was he traveling? He was traveling around America. Not
at
around
first,
the world. Yeah, he's traveling around America, and then
he
makes the decision
that he has to
play Jerusalem, because he has to make, because he really believes he is not Jesus.
Yeah.
He really believes he is not Jesus. Mm. And he actually is completely opposed to the whole concept of religion at this point, because of what has happened. Because his mother, which was one thing we didn't touch on, his mother is killed.
Yes.
In a seeming accident. But we know that it wasn't. We know that it was orchestrated by the guy who runs J2. And so when Chris goes out, he's followed by our protagonist, our bodyguard, who he convinces to protect him anyway, even outside of J2. And as what's he say? He says, I made a promise to your mother that I would always keep you safe.
That's right.
So
because
when
he starts to believe that the mother's very much the Mary figure in this, and because when he was at one stage in his past, he saw a vision of Mary promising him that if he did something miraculously good, he would be, you know, all his sins would be forgiven, and then he begins to see that mother as the Mary figure, and that she is the one that's offering him redemption through looking after, protecting her child.
Mm.
So that's his motivation at the core as well.
Absolutely. And so when they go to Jerusalem, of course, everything goes very badly.
Mm.
Because, and as expected.
Yes.
Because, of course, the world's religions, the fanatics basically take great offense to the fact that he is not only supposed to be Jesus, according to J2, but he is so anti-religious in his beliefs. What comes to the ultimate conclusion of this book, I think, which is the fascinating part of it all, is when the big reveal comes up, which is that it wasn't the Shroud of Turin.
Yes.
They actually admit that it wasn't Jesus. It was just a blood sample.
Mm.
And the twin kind of is the proof of that as well. And the scientist knew the whole time.
Yeah.
But she didn't let it on, you know? And I think that's... And then I love that last conclusion, that last moment where basically the producer of the J2 project basically says, I've got another show planned.
Yeah.
Where he wants to clone...
Meanwhile, I've had some ideas for a new show. We clone Muhammad.
And then, of course, he is.
There were way more Muslims than there are Christians, sir, so I imagine the viewership.
Yeah, and we can imagine how well that show would go down.
Yes.
Yeah. And, of course, we do have him dispatched.
Yes, in a rather violent sort of way. Yeah.
It's a really interesting read. I think that one of the things that actually really helps this book is that the art is incredibly stark. It's black and white, and it's very stark. It's very stylized, and I really like it. I think if this had been big, bold, you know, four color panels, I don't think it would have worked as well. I don't think it would have been would have had quite the impact, especially the IRA stuff, because there are issues which are almost dedicated wholly to his backstory, and I think some of that stuff is magnificent in the black and white.
Oh, look, I think this is a beautifully drawn book, and you know, you're right. I don't think it could have worked anything other than it would have been a very, very special artist and colorist to make this work in a big, bright, modern thing. This is Vertigo, of course, so they can do what they want.
Whatever they want. No.
But it is a wonderful thing. It's 6 issues, and I'm just having a look to see if it's coming out shortly as a trade paperback.
I hope so, because I would like more people to be able to read this. Look, this isn't going to be for everybody.
It's coming out April 9th as a trade paperback, and it's only going to be about $10 US.
Oh, that's worth getting,
it's definitely worth picking this up.
Look, and this is, as I say, this isn't going to be for everybody, and there's going to be a lot of people who actually may take offense to it. And I would say put aside that for the moment and read it for the – dig deeper. It's not just – because a lot of people – one of the things that we notice in the world today is that people see something on the surface and they immediately start protesting it before they've had a closer look at what it is. This book is not being offensive to Jesus.
And I think this is – if we talk about – like, you know, we've been talking about Kevin Smith all afternoon. Mm. And when if you think back to when Dogma came out, one of the funny things about the protests about that was that Kevin Smith himself got involved in the protests and started walking around with a placard outside. But that film is a parody of religion, yes, but it comes from a place of very deep personal faith on Kevin Smith's part, very much like this book. It comes from a place of someone who believes or has believed in his life and still wants to believe.
And is exploring their own faith.
Mm. And I think that's... if more people made explorations of faith like this, in this format, where it's actually exploring what does it mean to believe? Mm. You know, what are the consequences of that belief and what happens when people challenge those beliefs? You know, in this controlled environment of a comic book, over 6 issues, I think that's a really safe place to explore the thing. I mean, like, you know, the problem with beliefs has always been that if once you believe something, it's very hard to change your mind about it, you know. What this book does is raise a whole lot of ideas and things to muse about. Now, this isn't going to convert anybody if you already have unwavering belief in something. In fact, I have no doubt that people who are very staunch in their religious views, be it Christian or any other religion for that matter, will even go near this book.
Hmm.
And so it could be preaching to the converted, so to speak, in a lot of ways. But I do actually think that something like this is also an indicator of the maturity of comic books have reached as well in the last 20, 30 years. That, you know, we spoke about something like Dark Knight Returns at the top of the show, where that was talking about government in a very much in a stylized but mature way. It was, I mean, it's mature, but it's also Frank Miller's very black and white view of the world. This is literally a black and white view of the religious world, but it has more subtlety in it. And it's 6 issues.
Well, interestingly enough, it actually has more shades of grey in it.
Absolutely.
Than the black and white would actually make you think.
Mm.
This, what is interesting about this book is that it is not an atheist writing this book saying, stuff religion, this is the way it should be.
Mm.
This is somebody who is, as we said before, is actually exploring from a basis of faith and going, what if? You know, and a lot of it is, what if this happened? What if my faith was shaken? What if I believed in one thing, but something else was actually the truth? Mm. What if truth came out that what I had believed my entire life is not necessarily the way it should be? There's a lot of questions asked in this book. And I don't think he actually even endeavors to try and answer any of these questions. He's putting it out there saying, here is a story. Take from it what you will. And here is what would you do if somebody came along and said, who was supposed to be a religious figure and basically said, don't believe in religion.
Can I make a major retraction? Sean Murphy was born in New Hampshire.
Oh, well, there you go.
In 1980.
Okay, well, regardless.
And he's Jewish. No, I don't. I actually don't know that.
I retract everything I just said. No. But it does feel like somebody who is definitely having some sort of...
No, he was raised a Catholic, but is now an atheist, according to his... Right,
but raised a Catholic is the interesting one. As an example, all right, and this is probably far too much information than any of our listeners ever require, but I was actually never raised under a religious flag. So I basically... To this day, I'm not radical about it all. If you have whatever faith you have, you have whatever faith. I don't believe in a religion. I don't have a religious affiliation in any way. However, my take on something is going to be very different to somebody who was born in a religious faith and may have fallen out of it or may be still in it, or somebody who has discovered a religious faith. Everybody's going to have a different take on something. And I think what this book is basically saying is keep an open mind.
Absolutely. I mean, look, you know, I'm as I said at the top of the show, I was raised Catholic. And like many Catholics have...
Guilt
and have lapsed solidly in that time. And now I would call myself an atheist.
I don't think atheist is a bad word. I mean, it just means that we don't believe in a higher power, you know?
And I think that that's, but I mean, that's something that I've come to over the years. And I think that's something that, is just as, in many ways, is just as much a belief as any other.
Yeah. And I think the term atheist actually doesn't make sense because you actually do believe in something. You believe in not believing.
I believe in not believing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
agnostic is probably a much better term, but anyway, but the point is that I just don't have a religion. I don't believe in a higher power. Put it that way. You know? I don't believe something is governing my every movement and is judging me for it.
You know, many people have said, you know, a lot of religious beliefs and religion itself is actually quite beautiful.
And I can appreciate the ceremony of it all.
And like, you know, I love religious architecture, man. I love the iconography of religion. I mean, some of those beautiful buildings in the world, the churches, yeah, mosques, absolutely, and synagogues. On the other hand, it's just the when the fundamental beliefs start impinging on other people's rights, and I think this is interesting because it's a very US based thing, which is where the extreme right of religion has very much started to not just started but is controlling politics, and in fact major policy decisions on everything from climate change to the rights of a woman's body. That is a problem. That is a problem of faith, which should be a very personal thing, impinging on the rights of others. And I think that this is partially commenting on that as well. The religious fervor that gets whipped up as a result of one person choosing to do one thing. I said there's really great quote this week about science, which was, you know, the great thing, and I wish I could find who said it, but it was a very famous scientist. His name has escaped me. He said the beautiful thing about science is that it's true whether you believe it or not. and I think it's true. I mean, I think I put my faith in that just as much as people put faith in a higher power. I mean, my higher power is science.
America seems to have lost. I mean, there's so a subsection of America, and I'm from America, so I feel like I can speak.
No.
I feel like I can speak for my people or speak about my people without being condemned. But the bottom line is that there is a certain subsection of people who have spent a great deal of time talking about gun rights.
Yeah.
But they seem to have lost sight of the other side of it, which is a separation of church and state.
Yeah.
Which is a major fundamental part of the Constitution.
And unfortunately, when that thing about interpreted about Congress shall pass no law impinging on religious rights is taken to mean religion has carte blanche to do what it wants, and you know, in fact, religion should influence the laws. That should be that's the way they're interpreting it, rather than the other way around. Meaning, no. That means a strict separation.
That means
of church and state.
State is secular, and you believe what you want to believe.
Yeah. So it always annoys me when you hear a politician, particularly on the very topical issue of gay marriage, saying, "Well, no, I believe that marriage is between a man and a woman." It's like, well, I don't care what you believe. Your religion does not exclusively own the concept of marriage.
Well, not just that. Do you know what I believe in? I believe in what the Constitution says, which is all men are created equal. And as equal, we all have equal rights.
Exactly.
And if we all have equal rights, then therefore gays should be able to get married, just like the heterosexuals should be.
And this is not limited to the US or Australia or any other country.
No.
The UN Declaration of Human Rights, which just turned 60, I think.
Yeah,
is an inalienable human right?
Absolutely, you know? Every human being has the same rights as every other human being. That is the bottom line. Doesn't matter what you believe, what country you're from, what have you. We all have the same basic human rights.
Absolutely.
And as a basic human right, if you want to get married, whether you're
if
you're fool enough to get married, no, I'm married. And there's one basic question. This is kind of going off on a sidetrack here, but there's one basic question that no anti-gay marriage activist has ever been able to answer in any shape or form. And if you've got an answer for it, please, I beg you to write to feedback at behindthepanels.net and tell us. But the bottom line is, how does a gay couple getting married affect Well, my heterosexual marriage.
In fact, in the US at the moment, I think there's about 6 states have legalized gay marriage. I could be wrong about the number, but there's a few states now, New York being one of them.
Yep.
The fact that there are same-sex marriages happening in those states, we haven't heard of a rash of the collapse of marriages across the rest of the United States. So, ergo.
So my question stands. Mm. How does a gay couple getting married affect my heterosexual marriage?
Talk about a tangent, David.
Absolutely. Now, but you know what? You're going to delve into a book about religion. You're going to hit these topics.
Well, look, you know, particularly the two of us talking about it. And then we should say, just a quick bit of self-promotion on this, is these are the sort of things that we'll be talking about on Bury the Lead, which is a new show that we've got coming up in the next few weeks or
probably
so.
Early to mid-February at this point.
So. Look, people, while we're here, let's talk about it. We've got a couple of new shows coming up. If you've only been listening to this show, we've had another show going for quite some time, which is Film Actually.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, that has now finished after 100 episodes and a few specials, and like not 3 of them good. but we aim to get into a brand new show which we're very, very excited about, called Geek Movie Club, which is going to be very much like this show except for movies.
Yep.
We'll also be doing another show called Bury the Lead, which is, as you've just heard a sampling of it, it will be those stories that catch our attention, that get us talking. But really, we're not so...
And not always serious. Some of them will be funny. Some of them will be abstract as hell.
If you're long-term fans of our shows, the show that David started many years ago, The Old Geek Show...
if you used to listen to Geek Actually After Show in particular, that's kind of the direction you're heading.
Exactly. So. You know, you've got... It's called Bury the Lead because we're not so much interested in the headlines, but in
the stuff that's buried underneath.
Under the lead. and in fact, it's getting harder to read a news story these days that isn't burying its own lead. Yeah. So,
I defy you to read most mainstream media now and not go, what the?
Like, you'll get 7 paragraphs and go, oh, he's dead. That's the point of this story. Right, sorry, I understand. I thought this was about something else. No, but that's the crux of that, Shane. Just before we sign
So out, we should just finish that very, very quickly. Buried the Lead. The site is actually not live yet, but it's buriedthelead.com. So you can go and bookmark it now because it is there, but it's got a bit under construction
thing going.
And the other show is geekmovieclub.com, and that's also there, but it's not open yet. That will be opening soon. Mm. Geek Movie Club should be going in the next couple of weeks for our first launch, and there's some good stuff planned for that.
Mm.
And Buried the Lead will be following that a few weeks later, probably, as I say, about mid-February, and that'll be the stable of shows. And, of course, this show keeps going.
But, of course, this show will keep going next week. We'll be doing our next book that we'll be doing is From the Sublime to the Ridiculous, David. Next week we'll be doing The Pro, one of Samuel L. Jackson's favorite comic books, also by Image Comics. It's just a one-shot.
Now, this is a really interesting book because from the cover, you sit there and go, why the hell would we want to read this? Why? Because it's written by Palmiotti.
And
it's drawn by Amanda Connor, one of my favorite comic book artists. That's the word I'm looking
this
for.
This is basically the Power Girl team.
It's the Power Girl team. And you sit there and go, it's the Power Girl team doing a very adult book.
Oh, sorry. It's actually written by Garth Ennis, but it's got...
Sorry, Garth Ennis. That's right.
But
Garth
it's
Ennis.
Got...
Palmiotti's doing coloring or something?
He's
like
doing
that?
The inks on
inks,
it.
Yeah.
So it's Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti doing the art to Garth Ennis. Yes, I'm not surprised Garth Ennis wrote this.
No, I'm not surprised. Yeah. So basically, it's a very odd book. I actually read it a couple of weeks ago, and we'll talk more about that next week. Next issue, I should say.
It's only like a 70-80 prestige format graphic novel. Yeah. Read it. Be shocked by it. We'll come back, spoilers and all, next week. In the meantime...
I will warn you that even though we don't carry an explicit tag, some of the concepts... in that episode are going to be a bit rough.
We may end up having to put an explicit tag on next week.
We try not to, but let me tell you, the concepts are a bit rough in that book.
Look, that's issue 47, which will be the next one. Some of the other ones we've got coming up, we're going to have a look at Happy. We're going to look at an Australian book called The Deep.
Mm-hmm.
Working our way up to our 50th issue Spectacular, which will be a special where we'll look back on some of our favourite picks. Now, if you've got... anything that you'd like us to revisit in that time, that you had questions about something that we'd said in one of those past shows, or there's something you'd like us to revisit, or if there's a moment you want us to highlight in those shows, because we might go back and visit some of the moments where we've lost our...
If you do want us to do a moment, though, you've got to go and find us the time code of it.
Yes.
Find the time code, send us the time code, and we'll dig into it.
Because I'm remembering a moment I think we have to highlight, was when we first heard about Washing Marsha. Look for our summer
specials.
Still
one of my favorite moments.
Look for our Richard Holiday specials for those ones.
Yes.
And then we'll, you know, we've got a few other things coming, I think, but we'll soon be up to issue 50. So we've been doing this for 50 episodes, David, which is a milestone in itself.
This has been one of my favorite shows. It's been a wild ride.
Lots and lots of fun. But in the meantime, go and check us out at behindthepanels.net.
That's the new home for this show.
Finally, after 45 episodes, it has a new home. We had a new home as of last episode. You'll also find there some of my graphic bit stuff, which is small capsule reviews of comics coming out each week. So if we don't cover them on the show, hopefully we'll cover them on that. And I've just transferred over all my best of cover art, and I'm working on a new one of those, of the best cover art each month for January. But until then, happy reading, people.
And read more comics. They're good for you.
If you don't read enough comics, all of life's
no. I was just thinking, reading comics. I've actually, I got to tell you, since getting back into comics about, well, what are we talking now? Probably about 2 years ago. I think this has been the most content I've been in quite some time. I think it was something missing in my life.
And I think just the sheer range of comics that we've read since we've been doing this as well. I've read stuff that I wouldn't have even thought to read. And now when I go and look through some of my favorite comic book shops to go and buy stuff, I'm picking up volumes that I think,
and going back, and I've been going back and rereading the last like 8 years worth of series and stuff. And you go back and go, this is so satisfying. It's something, something I really have missed, because I was reading a lot of comics in my 20s and my late teens and 20s. And I think this has been a huge chunk missing here. And it's like really nice going back and doing
and
this.
And I think what's happened is that a lot of the time we as readers got disillusioned with a lot of the changes the industry was making. But now there seems to be a concerted effort, possibly partly thanks to the movies, to bring us readers back, but to make the comics worth reading again. And to actually give us quality stories first and events second, which is something Marvel's doing very well at the moment.
Absolutely.
And certainly DC. We haven't mentioned at all this episode just how awesome the Batman run is at the moment. That we're leading up to it. By the time we come back next time, I think Batman 17, Scott Snyder's
Batman we're waiting for that Batman issue, because that concludes the run.
Yeah, we'll include the
and you notice that we didn't mention the current crossovers of the Superman comics at all, because it's not very good.
No, avoid those. Speaking of Scott Snyder, he's actually got a project coming out later this year with Sean Murphy.
Oh, very interesting.
Called The Wake. They previously worked together on American Vampire. There's connections there, people. Connections.
Of course, they're all. It's very incestuous industry.
But until then, people, happy reading. Check us out at behindthepanels.net or, of course, facebook.com/behindthepanels.
And feedback at feedback@behindthepanels.net.
We hope to hear you next time, or hope you hear us next time and you're listening to us next time. Have a good one. We'll see you then.
Bye all.
You've been getting quite a name all around the place. Healing cripples, raising from the dead. Now I understand your God. At least that's what you've said. So you are the Christ, you're the great Jesus Christ. Prove to me that you're divine. Change my water into wine, that's all you need to. Then I'll know it's all true. Come on, King of the...